Good morning. My name is Peter, one of the pastors here at Toronto United Mennonite Church. So Jesus stands before Pilate. And we must not forget that this is a moment that Jesus has made. He knew. Jesus made this moment out of everything that was around. The imperial state, the striving factions, the earnest apostles, and the endless hope. Jesus has woven together this moment of confrontation and friction, and it was for this that he came, just as much as any moment of healing or teaching or suffering or living. In this moment that he's made, Jesus is alone. His friends have receded into the background of the story. Some have run away. Some are following, but not close enough to be identified with him. While we might wish that we were standing with him, he desires to stand alone. And this has been his plan all along. This is what he has chosen, even if the solitary moment is painful loneliness. Every gospel tells this story, shuffling the details but keeping the shape in the way that Jesus made it. His body is hauled away from the garden of prayer and taken into rough confinement. His hands, which hours ago were washing feet, holding towels, blessing bread, and passing wine, his hands are now shackled. His hands will never again be free. Until. But this moment is the moment he's made. And in this moment is clear. This is the rule of iron. Do to others what benefits you. Whoever has power has the right to use it. Might makes right. This rule creates a world of titans and tyrants, golden statues, and thunderous falls. The rule of iron says that if we are strong, it is the signal for war. The rule of iron believes only in the present moment, in the power of violence to solve a problem. The rule of iron cannot imagine the future. It cannot question the past. It makes, therefore, no space for wisdom. Now, I have no love for the government of Iran. I have no reason to believe that they operate in good faith or out of sound ideals. But the ongoing attack that began against them 2 weeks ago is rooted in the rule of iron. The attack by the United States and Israel without an international mandate proves that Iran was right. Countries are only safe if they have nuclear weapons. This attack justifies any nation in seeking weapons of mass destruction, because engaging in diplomacy did not keep Iran safe. And once the bombs start to drop, there is no easy way to stop the war and try something different. Iran must commit to war by all the means it has. This is the rule of iron, and Iran and Israel and the United States must follow the rule that they have made. But the rule of iron is not just swords and drones. It also makes a good show of being reasonable and civilized and rational and legal. The rule of iron provides wine for the rulers, vinegar for the vanquished, philosophy for the thinkers, work for the desperate. Wherever possible, it covers its activity with the fine linen of a compelling story. It gestures towards customs, principles, holy days, the rule of law, but always the guards are armed and the missiles are primed. So it is that Pilate goes through the motions. He hears the charges, he quibbles legalities, he consults, speaks. Everyone knows that Pilate is the man with the power. They come to his headquarters, navigate his guards, answer his summons. They maneuver within the lattice of power and knowledge that hides the edges of the rule of iron. But Pilate also has to maneuver. He is also trapped by this obdurate rule. He leaves his palace to talk to the Jewish leadership. He returns to talk to Jesus. He goes back to offer the strange Barabbas compromise. Pilate's power is conditional. It is questionable. And it is for questions that Jesus has made this moment. Pilate has no interest in the faith of the Jews. And so far, his fearsome reputation has encouraged the nation to sort out its own problems. But the prisoner is at his door. The lobbyists are in his court, and they demand action from him. If he wishes to remain in control, he has to resolve this situation. He has to step out of the iron world of facts and into the silver world of questions and ideas. Jesus is consistent in how he speaks to people in power. To their questions, he gives short, complex replies which do not satisfy. It's not the same with everyone. To the dispossessed and the wounded, he speaks gently and kindly, deftly asking whether they seek healing of body or spirit. He says things like, "Do you want to be made well? Where will we buy food for these people to eat?" He asks, "Where are they? Has no one condemned you?" He speaks to them about his own need for water and sustenance and company. But with Pilate, with Nicodemus, with the religious leaders and the political rulers, Jesus is self-possessed, defiant, challenging. He gives nothing away, except for an invitation into a deeper life, birth from above. Pilate seeks clarity, but Jesus offers complexity. Pilate wishes to resolve the situation, but his simple interrogation gains him no momentum. So while Pilate moves back and forth between the power blocks, concerned with remaining at the center and maintaining his iron rule, Jesus introduces a new dimension, a different kingdom, a higher power. Pilate cannot categorize him, but he finds that he cannot ignore him. And you can sense his frustration. What is this kingdom? Is it a threat to his rule or just another Jewish myth that will keep his rivals divided? What is this power that Jesus has to be so hated and so loved? Where is this rumored army of fanatical followers armed to the teeth? Is there any truth in his claims? What is truth? There are sometimes questions without answers. The Bible has a small but powerful collection of questions which the text does not answer. After his murder of Abel, Cain asks, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And the text provides no answer to this. We are asked to think about the limits of brotherly concern. If Cain does not care for his brother, who will? God commissions Cain to serve as a living memorial to his brother's untimely death, and God takes on the role of Abel's keeper. Psalm 8 asks God, "What are humans that you are mindful of them?" God makes no reply. The psalmist continues on in praise, leaving the question to remind us of the gulf that is between us and God, and of God's decision to bridge the gap. And God asks questions too. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" Job speaks with God, but his question goes unanswered. God is beyond accountability. God has no need to explain. And yet, God speaks with Job. God replies to Job's questions, whether or not he can accept the answers. Questions which go unanswered provoke our thinking. They invite us to imagine, consider, and perhaps you have different answers than I do to some of these questions. Perhaps you feel that these questions don't need any elaboration, but stand on their own. Pilate's question is, what is truth? And you can read this question in many different ways, as frustration, confusion, as boredom, as anger. Figuring out how to read the question is hard enough, but answering it takes us beyond. I was recently invited to talk with a young pacifist from a different Christian tradition. Three different chaplains had encouraged her to get in touch with me as someone who they knew to be grounded in a pacifist Christian tradition. So I agreed to meet with her, thinking even if I can't help her with her specific questions, her issues, I could offer a listening ear. And then she wrote to me about her gratitude for these different chaplains and their wonderful skills of empathetic presence and active listening, which were great, but didn't help. So I realized that if we were to meet, I would need to do more than just affirm her questions. I needed to try to offer some answers. I would need to tell her what I thought. And this is not my normal way of interacting. I like to listen first and speak seldom. I try to think very carefully, and I rarely give my opinion without being asked directly. And yet there are times when we are called upon to speak, to give our thoughts, our opinions, to speak the truth that we think we know. So I went into that conversation prepared to speak. That willingness, including all of the things I said that were not right, allowed us to dig into the questions that she brought, and I have no regrets about the yes that I said. By the time we said goodbye, we had agreed that the work of the pacifist is preparation. In times of crisis, people act in whatever way it is that they've prepared to act. So if they've practiced the skills of peaceful presence, they use them. If they've practiced nonviolent intervention, they attempt it. If they have worked out how to leave a scene safely, they can try that. But if they have not prepared for a crisis, they might freeze or react dangerously, making a bad situation work. In the Gospels, Jesus tells his friends that they will experience persecution. He is encouraging them to prepare for their chance to speak the truth to the merchants of war and conquest. Although his body will not be with them, he encourages them that the Holy Spirit will be with them and will give them the words that they need to speak. And since that day, we have made moments and places like this to practice the presence of the Holy Spirit, to speak words of life and peace to one another, to practice the rituals of care and service, and to call one another towards faithfulness. What we do here is enough to make a good life. This is faithful preparation, whether the days are full of distress or blessing. Communities like the church allow us to live in the in-between, where we know the question but not yet the answer. Or perhaps when we know the answer but not how to make it convincing for our neighbors who put their trust somewhere else. Pilate was looking for simple answers, and he failed to understand what Jesus was proclaiming. Who can blame him? The delusion of his power prevented him from understanding. All he could do was flee from the presence of Jesus and attempt to make a deal with the blood of Barabbas. Pilate asks Jesus human and political questions. Jesus responds with human and divine answers. Through his words, in this moment that he has made, the dimension of truth and love intrudes on Pilate's world of power and control. We also can make moments. The harsh reality of the rule of iron will show its false nature when we make a moment to refuse its terms and share the truth that we know. What is truth? Truth is love and mercy and freedom from lies and control. Truth is revealed in the life and the teachings of Jesus, how he went to Jerusalem and everything that happened there. Pilate's iron power hides away from truth. It cannot face it. It cannot see it. So let us practice being people who reveal the truth. Let us prepare our words to speak the truth. Let us prepare our hearts to show the truth. Let us prepare our bodies to act the truth. Let us prepare our community to live the truth. It begins with questions. It starts with preparation. It waits for a moment.